Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game, with me, Kevin Day, and him, Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. Later in the show, we will be hearing from Peter McCormack, the Bitcoin investor who's just bought South Midlands League Division 1 side Bedford FC and intends to take them to the Premier League. Just the 10 short steps up the ladder there, Kieran.
That's right, yes. It's fascinating stuff, though.
We've just done the interview, actually, and I have to say it was one of the most interesting 28 minutes I've been involved with for quite some time. Kieran, before we start, we talked in recent pods about Albion copyrighting the name Albion and Posh Spice copyrighting the name Posh and Peterborough trying to copyright the name Posh. Have you considered, as a Brighton fan, copyrighting the one-all draw?
harsh but fair. A really good performance. We're playing good football. We just can't stick the ball in the back of the net more than once in a game.
I had to turn the sound. Ed and I were watching it, your game against Chelsea, and I had to turn the sound down because he was getting apoplectic at the Graham Potter loving. So he's going to have one. They've only lost four games. They've only won two or whatever it is. Anyway, let's do that. It's Newsday, Kieran, before our interview. We do have some news stories, and I'm afraid Derby fans, one of them is you. But firstly, tickets for the World Cup in Qatar are on sale, Kieran, for as little as £8 each. And I suspect that still won't be enough to attract many people to the World Cup in Qatar.
Yes, these are the Category 4 tickets, and they will be made available to people who are residents of Qatar. We are fully aware that the population of the country has sort of the local people and a very big migrant workforce, and there's plenty of people from my area of finance working there and so on. So FIFA have given a significant number of tickets at that price. Also, in respect of the Categories 3, 2, and 1. It looks like the prices are going to be lower for many matches than what we saw for Russia in 2018, which is a step in the right direction.
Yeah,
I think England are getting around about 16% of the tickets for the matches in which they're playing in. The draw hasn't yet been made, but that's a positive. More tickets for fans of individual clubs. The one thing which disappointed me, having read some initial blurb, is that a third of the tickets for every match are available for sponsors, partners, or the FIFA family and so on, which I think is disproportionately high. But the sponsors will say, well, we're putting a lot of money in, and we can call the tune to a certain extent.
Yeah, do you know what, Kieran? I have to say this, regardless of reservations about where the World Cup's being held, it's always good to be in a World Cup year. It's always exciting, isn't it? Always looking forward to putting the wall chart up. They're very cheap tickets, Kieran, and we weren't meant to talk about this, but compare and contrast tickets for £8 to Man United charging Middlesbrough fans £45 for their FA Cup tickets. That's not right, is it?
Well, for a fourth round match, which has been shifted to 8 p.m. on a Friday, so therefore getting back to Borough will be difficult, is harsh. We're fully aware that in the Premier League itself, there is a cap on away fan tickets at £30, which is good. Yeah, could be lower, but it's still good. Borough fans will be looking forward to it. I've had some sort of to and fro from Manchester United fans themselves who say, "Well, yeah, hold on, Manchester United, when they play away, they're always scalped, because United are a big draw and therefore the ticket prices are accordingly." So you can understand that, but what about three and two wrongs make two wrongs don't make a right. City, I think City are charging £10 for their home match against Fulham that same weekend. Spurs are charging us £25 at Brighton to go to their new stadium. Palace, you're subsidising the cost of the coaches from people from Hartlepool. So there's lots of Premier League clubs doing pretty good things. And the Glazer family, on the back of just paying themselves and the other investors an £11 million dividend a couple of weeks ago, seem to be thinking, well, the reason why we can afford to do this is that Manchester United's just a cash cow and we're going to milk it.
Yeah, Selhurst Park's already sold out for the Hartlepool game, which is pleasing. Now, Peter McCormack, who we're going to be hearing from soon, is a Bitcoin disciple and did his best in our interview to explain the difference to me between Bitcoin and crypto. I'm not entirely sure it's settled in my head, but Gareth Southgate is seeking legal advice after his name was used as part of a cryptocurrency scam.
Yes, I fully understand Peter's position in terms of Bitcoin. Bitcoin is sort of the gold standard of cryptocurrencies. There have been over 1,000 cryptocurrencies have failed over the course of recent years. So our friend Gavin Brown, who came on the show a couple of months ago, who is probably the leading academic on the subject, he wrote a research paper and he says, well, like all issues and like all products, there are good bits and bad bits. But what we are increasingly seeing is football and people connected to football and also people from your industry, the world of entertainment, their faces are being used as part of scams. And if you go on to many websites, you will see this. Holly Willoughby says, invest in this particular crypto product and you'll become... Well, it's now moved on to Gareth Southgate. And I think the thing about Gareth Southgate is... he has an element of gravitas. He's very measured. We all know that he's a very thoughtful, he's a very intelligent man. And clearly, some of these scamming companies, by trying to link their products to him without his permission, putting quotations, which he has not made, into their blurb, is exploitation. And this is part of the problem that we have with a World Wide Web that is unregulated, that unfortunately it's full of scumbags and scammers.
I've done quite a lot of work with Holly Willoughby. I like her very much, but even I wouldn't take investment advice from Holly. The Derby County story, unfortunately, Kieran, is rumbling on and looks like it will do so for some time. What's the latest?
The administrators, having done next to nothing in terms of public pronouncements for a significant period of time, lobbed a hand grenade into the affairs on Friday when they said they blamed the EFL for the EFL said we need some proof of funds for the rest of season, and the administrator saying, we're the good guys here, and they tried to paint the EFL as the bad guys. Clearly, we have the two outstanding claims from Middlesbrough and Wickham. And I think the administrators are trying to force Borough and Wickham and some of the other creditors through what is something which is known as a cram down, where you just say take it or leave it or get stuffed. And if that cram down is successful, then I think that there is a danger of a further 15-point penalty when the club exits administration. So I think the administrators are trying to put pressure on the EFL to turn a blind eye to the additional 15-point penalty. The EFL are responsible to their members. Derby County is a member. There are 71 other members as well. And the EFL, to date, have said, well, we wouldn't be prepared to do that. I did speak to a chief executive of an EFL club a couple of days ago, and he said, if this is allowed to take place, we then return to the Wild West, because it would effectively allow all club owners who are not trying to run the businesses on an appropriate level to just utilize emotional blackmail as a way of trying to avoid the additional penalties which come from clubs going into administrations. So there's that. There was then an emergency question. There was a session in Parliament which lasted for probably about 40 minutes, and Derby County fans, to their credit, they've been bombarding MPs. So, yeah, they have utilised the democratic process to say, we are in danger of going out of business. Can you highlight this? MPs from across the House, this was very much cross-party, were saying this Derby County can't be allowed to die. And clearly the government appeared to sort of take that on board, but was urging the EFL, the administrators, the people from Wickham and from Middlesbrough to come to some form of settlement. But what they haven't mentioned, of course, is there's another creditor involved, which is HMRC. Yeah. Now, if HMRC say, okay, we're prepared to take an 80% haircut, you know, we're prepared to reduce the money which is due to us. And remember, that money has been deducted from employees' pay by Mel Morris, and then he's used that to run the club to pay some of the other bills. As the next time there's an administration, exactly the same type of emotional blackmail would take place, and people will say, well, hold on, if it's happening in the football industry, why should football be unique? So it's an absolute mess. Middlesbrough have come out with a statement to say, hold on, we're being painted here as the bad guys. We were unhappy with the way that Mel Morris was running Middlesbrough in terms of his creative accounting. And you know, as I've always said, creative accounting is where you are at the very, very limits of whether it's by the rules or not.
Yeah.
I've got my views and other people have theirs. So the fans are very upset. But there's one set of people who have not got a mention in all of this, and this is the staff. So again, I've been talking to some people who are employees of Derby County Football Club, and they are saying they're getting next to no information from the administrators, and morale is at an all-time low. Yeah, they can't see a future. They are relying on social media, WhatsApp groups, you know, all the type of stuff where if it's your future, if it's your pay packet in a few months' time, you want a degree of clarity. Even if it's bad news, people will accept bad news if it comes from a good source. So I think more could be done. You know, nobody wants this club to go out of business. You know, in my mind, Derby County are one of the biggest clubs present in the EFL. It's not in the EFL's interest. There's also a danger that, you know, we know that we've established where banks do not lend to football clubs for reasons which we've given, but you can buy stuff at the club shop and so on using a credit card. Now, credit card companies themselves are starting to get twitchy. If Derby are allowed to go bust and the credit card companies lose money, could it be that the credit card industry say, we perceive professional football at the EFL level in this country as being too high a risk, and therefore we'll simply say you can't use your Visa card or your MasterCard.
Okay.
And then, of course, the clubs have got a problem because that's what people want to use to buy. It affects their ability to sell merchandise and so on. So it's a mess. It's a mess on a local level. It's a mess on a national level. It's a tragedy. It's good that it's being highlighted. Lots of, you know, there's far more mainstream media coverage taking place. It was great that it was mentioned in Parliament. Tracy Crouch, who's been on the show twice now, and you know, whom we think very highly, she spoke very eloquently, as did many of her colleagues on all sides of the House. But we need action.
Yeah. Also, doesn't help staff morale when that same mainstream media is assuming and reporting that Wayne Rooney, he's doing a fantastic job as a figurehead at Derby, is probably on his way to Everton. But Kieran, I tried to clarify this on Sunday, but as you know, I wasn't feeling very well, and I think I clarified it worse. But I need to get this straight. Middlesbrough and Wickham are not actual creditors at the moment, are they? Derby don't owe them any money, but they are potential creditors because they might take legal action against the club at some time in the future. Is that correct?
Well, they have instigated legal action.
Right.
So there are two things to determine. A, is that legal action going to be successful? And if it is successful, then they become creditors. And they will say, well, we commenced before the club went into administration.
Right.
So that's an unknown. Again, we've spoken to sports lawyers, and they've given us their traditional answer of it depends.
Yeah.
As to whether the claims are successful or not. There is a case for saying if these claims are successful, could football clubs claim for poor refereeing decisions,
yeah,
for career-ending injuries by, you know, what from bad tackles? And also, there have been many, many historic examples of clubs that have been promoted to the Premier League who, at the same time, broke FFP rules whilst they're in the Championship.
Yeah.
Could we therefore have a statute of limitations issue? Can we start to get retrospective claims taking place? So it's a huge can of worms. It needs resolving. So first of all, is it going to be or not? We don't know. We're not lawyers. Secondly, the second issue is, are these claims football creditors or not? And why is that important? Football creditors have to be paid 100%,
yeah,
and the unsecured creditors have to be paid 25% to avoid the 15-point penalty.
Oh, dear. Former Burnley owner Mike Garlick could regain control of the club if Sean Dyche's side gets relegated. You don't like whataboutery, and there's quite a bit of whataboutery in this. There's a lot of what-if-ery in this story, isn't there?
Yes. I've said on a couple of occasions, because I think when listeners have said, what do I consider to be the best run club in the Premier League? I've always pointed at Burnley,
yeah,
ironically, under Mike Garlick, the former owner. Burnley was sold for around about £150 million to AL Capital. That was to acquire 84% of the club. How did AL Capital pay for that? Well, I think some of it's being paid in installments. Some of it's being paid by Burnley taking out loans to then pay the former owners. And some of it has been through AL Capital taking some of Burnley's cash. When they buy the club, yeah, they get all of its assets, including its cash. I said, right, well, we've got a lot of cash in the bank account because we're very, you know, they clean their face all the time, Burnley, and we're going to use the cash of the club to pay Mike Garlick and his partners. Perfectly legal. But Burnley fans will tell that there's not been a lot of investment in terms of recruitment. Clearly they've just sold Chris Woods,
yeah,
as well, to a relegation rival, although I think that was down to him in a clause in his contract.
Yeah.
But Burnley are not having the best of seasons. They've been there before, and they've Houdini-like managed to get themselves out, normally earlier than January as well. But it looks as if Mike Garlick has a relegation clause in the sale contract, which allows him to buy back Burnley at a set price should the club be relegated. So it could return to old ownership, and I think there will be mixed feelings, is the politest way of describing that, from Burnley fans themselves.
It's hard to tell if Burnley are in a genuine relegation battle, because they've got about 9 games in hand. They've barely played, have they? Huddersfield Town's interim chief executive and former chairman, Dean Hoyle, says he ploughed millions of pounds, Kieran, into the club late last year to stop it going into administration.
Yes, and there's a few parallels here, I think, with Burnley, in the sense that Dean Hoyle sold the club, or rather he sold 75% of the club to a guy called Paul Hodgkinson, and Dean kept 25% himself. Now Dean historically is one of those owners that we've seen in the Championship, in League One, who were putting between £7 to £10 million a year into their club, into their local club. We saw that with Marcus Evans. We saw that with Trevor Hemmings. And Huddersfield were promoted to the Premier League. Two exciting years for them. Then things sort of started, I think, to turn sour in that second year. He sold 75% to this guy called Paul Hodgkinson, who runs a company called Pure Legal. Pure Legal is one of these legal claims companies.
Yeah.
It's now in administration, as are 9 other companies, I think, owned by Paul Hodgkinson. I think it's fair to say that Pure Legal doesn't have the best of best of viewpoints from customers. If you go on to Google reviews and read them, there's an awful lot of 1-stars. So yeah, we're not cynics. We're not going to say that the company appeared to be a glorified form of ambulance chasers, because that wouldn't be appropriate for us. Yeah, we've not used the service. But there seems to be a degree of dissatisfaction from the consumer base. Now, how did Paul Hodgkinson buy Huddersfield from Dean Hoyle? It looks as if he was using the parachute payments that Huddersfield had from relegation from the Premier League to pay Dean Hoyle, which again, from Huddersfield fans, they'll say, you know, why are we not reinvesting the parachutes into the squad? It looks as if the money was being used. And certainly from looking at Huddersfield's accounts in the first year following relegation, the value of the loans owed by the club to outside parties, it looks like that's Dean Hoyle, they went down by £19 million. So this appears to be utilisation of the parachutes. Parachute payments were not intended for that. So you can understand the degree of frustration. So it's not great. Dean Hoyle has said that the club is struggling financially, yet it's still receiving parachute payments. So he put £2 million of his own money into the club to pay the October wage bill. And then on the 30th of December, the existing chief executive left with, and I quote, immediate effect, with Dean Hoyle stepping into that role on a day-to-day basis. So he used to run the club. He then sold the club. It's all gone horribly wrong. And now he's back, but he only owns a quarter of it. And I think, Marcus Evans, who is the former Ipswich owner, he is now being linked with that position.
Mm. One of the perks, Kieran, or drawbacks, if you prefer, of being freelance is you get to spend a lot of time at home watching daytime TV. And Ali never gets tired currently at the moment. She's only back for a few days, but she never gets tired of me watching adverts. That say, have you had an accident at work? And me going, not at work, mate, it's lockdown. She thinks it's hilarious that I say it every time. She really laughs.
I can imagine.
Brentford are a club that are having a very good first season in the Premier League. They're a club that you've had a lot of good words for in the past, and they've published their latest accounts.
Yes, and the Brentford model, which a lot of people have spoken about, has really come to fruition. So in terms of the day-to-day running of the club, the figures look horrendous. Brentford paid £270 in wages for every £100 of income. So that looks bad. They were losing a lot of money on a regular basis.
Yeah.
But the Brentford model, which is the utilization of data analytics through Matthew Benham's beliefs and his philosophy, and also the fact that they run a B team as opposed to an academy, allowed them to sell Ollie Watkins and Ben Rama. They made £43 million in profits on that, and they got promoted.
Yeah.
You know, so they what Brentford are really good is that they spot players, develop them, and by the time they've sold them, they've already spotted the replacement. Tony's come in,
yeah,
and he was fantastic for them last season.
Yeah.
They would have broken even had it not been for COVID. Clearly that was costing them, and they'd moved to the new stadium. So a bit like Spurs, probably never a worse time to move to a new stadium.
Yeah.
You've got all of the additional costs, but you're not bringing in the additional revenue. But for those people that say you have to, you have to spend, and you have to incur huge losses to get out of the championship, I think Brentford is an example of thinking outside of the box and utilizing talent recruitment as a means of a sort of as a fourth income source, because they do that every single year, and I've got nothing but admiration for such an approach.
And now things are looking grim at Derby, Kieran, but they may be looking up for Bury fans, because Bury Council have announced that they're going to contribute £450,000 toward bringing football back to Gig Lane.
Yes, yeah, so there was a council meeting. The Forever Bury group have asked for some financial assistance. And in the words of Bury Council, this is for the recommissioning of Gig Lane. So I think there have been some volunteer groups already starting, because it has been left to left to its own devices, the stadium. You know, I think the groundsman has been, or the former groundsman's been in, and has been mowing the grass on a regular basis, because he's a local lad and he's got this huge affection for the club. And it's one of those things which really do make you proud to be connected to football. The council have said they are looking for value for money. They are ticking all the right boxes here, that they will only give this money on the basis of that there is a sustainable plan. There is evidence of proper governance at the club, something, of course, which we didn't see under the reign of Steve Dale. And everything has to be lawful. So the council are not just giving them a blank check, and it will be monitored. But again, a further step forwards. And you know, I think we've said that, you know, one team in Bury is essential. I think the council ideally are keen for the two factions in Bury to resolve their differences and to have a team through which the whole town can be proud and get behind.
Yeah. I sometimes wonder where producer Guy gets his information from, but he seems to be adamant at this fact. I just read them out. But according to producer Guy, Birmingham City fans are unhappy with the arm's length management model at the club.
Yes. Birmingham City Football Club are owned by a company called Birmingham Sports Holdings. Mm. Birmingham Sports Holdings is based in Hong Kong. Birmingham Sports Holdings is ultimately controlled by a company in the British Virgin Islands.
Uh-huh.
Now, you know, so you start to put those things together. So it is Far Eastern investment. There appears to be somewhere between zero and no communication coming from the club. The club's having a bad season, which makes things worse. And so therefore, yeah, Birmingham fans are starting to get twitchy. There are some people doing some magnificent work. There's a guy who's on Twitter. I think it's called Daniel. He runs a Twitter account, and he just focuses on Birmingham. and he does an absolutely brilliant job there. But there is a fear. You know, what's the objectives of the owners? And you know, trying to get answers here is proving to be impossible. What are the objectives? Are they looking for an exit route? St. Andrews itself, by all accounts, is falling into increasing states of disrepair. No money is being spent on maintenance. What they're seeing on the pitch isn't good. So, there will always be unhappy football fans because there will always be clubs near the bottom of the division. But it does seem that this is quite a long-term issue at Birmingham. And the hashtag, which was BSHL, standing for Birmingham Sports Holdings Limited, BSHL out, I think was the number two trending hashtag in Twitter last Friday. So this is indicative of how football fans can come together for a common cause.
I always think of one Birmingham City fan in particular who I spent a couple of very happy days with, the Gabby Cabby. He's a taxi driver stroke poet who writes poems about Birmingham City. Follow him on Twitter. He's very funny. But we love all football fans, most football fans, and we love all football clubs. But sometimes you get I wouldn't say affection, because technically I hate every club but Palace, but they're a Birmingham club I really like. And when it makes it harder, when you know fans of that particular club, it makes it even harder. A really good friend of mine, TV producer, is a Derby County fan, and I just feel so sorry for him because he's not sleeping. I mean, that's how things are. That's the reality of all these people, administrators and overseas owners, doing what they do. And the reality is people not sleeping and are terrified of losing their football club. Just a couple of stories to go, Kieran, before that very interesting interview. And the first one is that the EFL is facing the threat of a legal challenge from championship clubs over its refusal to alter profit and sustainability rules post-COVID.
Yes. So this is a story, I think it was in Mail Sport. What we have seen post-COVID is the transfer market has collapsed. Now, many clubs, and we've just been extolling the virtues of Brentford. Many clubs in the EFL, especially in the Championship, are prepared to suffer losses on a day-to-day basis. And there's if you're losing money in the business, you have a choice of doing things. A, you can sell some assets, or B, you can go to the owners and beg. And if the owners are nice, they'll give you money. Now, the first option, to a certain extent, has dried up because the ability of EFL clubs to go to those potential buyers, probably in the bottom half of the Premier League, but also the overseas market, that has significantly diminished. So that option for those clubs is no longer there. Certainly, there were some comments from Bristol City's chief executive Richard Gould to say, "We really have been hit by this. We don't know whether Bristol City are one of these clubs who wants the EFL to consider a change to the FFP, now known as profitability and sustainability rules, but." What's the point of having a championship next season where within 2 or 3 months we're running stories and we've got 8 clubs who have got points deductions because of the collapse of the transfer market? So in order for the rules to change, and there has to be a vote, whether there's enough clubs to want to vote, because everybody's going to vote in their own self-interest. So those clubs that have just come down from the Premier League itself, they've got the benefit of parachute payments. They might say, well, that this gives us an advantage over the existing clubs in the Championship. Rates to be seen, but as before, it's a mess, it's going to be a challenge for both the EFL and individual clubs.
Yeah. Finally, Kieran, 8 members of the Eastbourne Borough Board of Directors have resigned. That's quite an impressive number of resignations in one day, isn't it?
It is. And on top of that, the company secretary and the commercial manager all resigned. I think this took place at around about 6 p.m. on Saturday. Ironically, after Eastbourne Borough winning, and Eastbourne Borough are in the National League South, they are a club who who struggled a few years ago when they lost their main sponsor. Mm. A new owner came in. The club is effectively run as a CIC, which is sort of a community interest company. It's owned partially by something called the Acorns Charitable Trust. And having community interest organisations is fantastic at many levels, but it can lead to personality conflicts. And by the sounds of this, there's been an almighty fallout between people. And of course, there's a danger that if you lose your board of directors, you lose their skill set. How long is it going to take before we get new people coming in? That's uncertain. And there's that risk of clearly losing the club altogether. Now, you know, I live quite close to Eastbourne. It's a small town, but you know, we've always said non-league football is absolutely fantastic. It's indicative that lots of clubs are being run on the basis of a wing and a prayer with local people chipping in. But when they start to fall out, things can go terribly wrong.
Interview time, Kieran. Peter McCormack is the new owner of Bedford FC. And Peter is, I think it's fair to say, a disciple of Bitcoin. And his plan, his ambition, is that Bitcoin will take that club from South Midlands League Division 1 to the Premier League. How could we not talk to him? This episode of The Price of Football is brought to you by the AI-powered workspace Notion. We are living in an era of information overload and we have more knowledge than ever before. But what do we do with it all? If you're in Notion, you put that knowledge to work.
It's a workspace designed not just for making progress, but getting inspired. And all I can say on a personal level, as for somebody whose life is quite chaotic, and I'm writing pieces for government and newspapers and media content, I've got my university commitments and I'm supposed to be writing a book, I use Notion all the time because it brings order into chaos.
Well, if you need order brought to your chaos, you can try Notion for free when you go to notion.com/priceoffootball. That's all lowercase letters, notion.com/priceoffootball, and start turning your ideas into action. That's notion.com/priceoffootball.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
Peter, thank you for joining us this morning. Before we talk about your plans for your hometown club, I believe you are the first person ever to fund a takeover by Bitcoin. Why is that a good thing? And can you give us a rough idea of how much the amount translates into traditional money?
Well, the club hasn't been financed by taking over with Bitcoin. I financed it, the takeover, just with my own private funds, which have been earned through having a podcast, which is about Bitcoin. But no, I financed it, the sale of the club I'd be paying for with hard British pounds. But there is an intrinsic link between Bitcoin and the club, which I want to explain to you. It's one of the reasons I wanted it to come on and talk to you guys, because I wanted it to be clear what it is and what it isn't, because there is a lot of confusion about this, especially for people who don't fully understand this world.
Me. Yeah, exactly. That's one of the reasons I'm pleased to talk to you. Well, let's do that now then, because I was going to put that question to you by saying, because Bradford City recently rejected a takeover bid by a crypto group. So just tell us then, what is the difference between Bitcoin and crypto? Because I have to admit, sometimes when Kieran explains it, I do glaze over a little bit, because it is quite a difficult distinction to make for some people.
Yeah, and in the world of cryptocurrency, there's like an ongoing battle between what are considered Bitcoin maximalists, which are the people who only care about the cryptocurrency Bitcoin, and then the people who are involved in the wider crypto community, where there's, you know, there's a few big players, but there's thousands and thousands of these coins. Let's talk about the birth of Bitcoin, what it is and what it means. Bitcoin was created as a decentralized form of money, which means a form of money that nobody controls. That means the government doesn't control it. So at the moment, I think the figures just came out today of 5.4% inflation in the UK, and that's a result of, you know, government spending. We can argue the toss whether it is overspending during COVID, but inflation comes generally from an increase in the money supply. It is a bit more complicated than that, but an increase in the money supply will drive inflation, whereas Bitcoin can never be inflated. It's a 21 million fixed limit currency. It's decentralized. Nobody controls it. Nobody can switch it off. And it means anybody can send money to each other. And it was designed over by somebody, we don't actually know who they are, Satoshi Nakamoto. But there was a series of people attempting to do these cypherpunks who wanted to create a form of money that was honest, that wasn't controlled by anybody else. And Bitcoin was the first time this became successful. Hmm. And it means a lot to the people involved in Bitcoin, because they care about honest money, good, sound money. When you look at countries outside of the UK, look at Turkey at the moment where the currency is collapsing, or Lebanon where the currency has collapsed, Bitcoin has become a lifeboat for these people who've been able to put some of their money into Bitcoin to protect their wealth. Because when you get 20, 30, 40% inflation, it, you know, not only destroys countries, but it destroys the lives of the people in those countries. Hmm. So that's Bitcoin. But there are all these other cryptocurrencies and DAOs and NFTs and all these ideas of creating these systems, which I would say are not really decentralized like Bitcoin is. They are more centralized, and they operate more like companies. I've got no interest in any of those. I focus my entire career on Bitcoin, what it does for the world. My podcast is focused on that. And I'm also a filmmaker. I've been out to a few countries and made films about Bitcoin. So the difference between us and, say, Bradford is that I'm not actually requiring anyone to buy any Bitcoin or use Bitcoin for the operation of the club. It's really a position I'm in where I can leverage the community for what my goal is to bring league football to Bedford.
Yeah.
Whereas something like the Bradford was some Americans, I believe, who had this idea of creating a bunch of crypto-based products which they would use to run the club with. And, you know, maybe doing fan tokens, which I found generally quite gross, or where people have tried these DAOs to have the decision making of clubs run by a group of people, which I think is moronic. And then also the sale of these NFTs, which I've kind of little to no interest. I understand like why people find it fun. Again, it's just not me. I'm focused purely on Bitcoin, which to me is sound money. And I'm leveraging my platform that I've created as a Bitcoin podcaster and filmmaker and the community to create a commercial model that allows me to try and bring league football to Bedford.
Yeah, don't get me started on fan tokens. And you're hoping, before we talk about the football, you're hoping that what you call the global Bitcoin community will buy into the project at Bedford, aren't you?
I mean, it's already happening. There's like couple of different levels on this. There's the sponsorship side of things. So I've been going out to various companies within the space trying to sell sponsorship, and, you know, I've been fairly successful so far. I think my run rate now is £750,000 is sponsorship sold in the first 4 weeks, which for a team in the 10th tier of football, which had a £15,000 budget last year, is a real game changer. And then second to that, what I want to do is leverage the community of Bitcoiners to get behind this, have a team to get behind. Again, I'm having quite a bit of success with that. And it's very early days, but, you know, I've got people around the world who listen to my podcast, who follow me on Twitter, again, quite excited by this. We streamed a game. We streamed a game last Saturday, and I think we had about 250 people watching that stream for our first game, which was very cool. But I obviously want to get that to the point where it's thousands of people.
You initially tried to buy Bedford Town, didn't you? Why did they turn you down?
I think the reason they turned me down is I think John Taylor, the chairman over there, he wants to do what I want to do. You know, he wants to bring league football to Bedford. And
yeah.
I think it's just a bit too early for him to give up that project. We had three or four good conversations. I explained, what I think I could do and how I could support the club. I made an offer for the club, which was eventually rejected. But I think the reason it was rejected is, I was quite clear is that I would be bringing in my own team. And John wouldn't be involved. He could stay involved in the club, but he wouldn't be involved in the running of the club. But I just don't think it was the right time for him. And, I don't hold any grudges. He's done a great job this season. The team is top of the division they're in and, looking good for promotion. I don't think they have the commercial model that will be sustainable to get them in the Football League, though.
So you've done what a lot of people would love to do, Peter. You've bought your hometown club or one of your hometown clubs. Do you still plan to rename and rebrand the club? And if so, why?
Yeah, it's a good question. So the name side of things, really, it was a bit of a joke. What happened was I was out in the US in Miami working on the idea with potential investors. And I'd seen what Beckham had done with Inter Miami. And I'd made a joke. I was like, wouldn't it be funny if we called it Inter Bedford? And then but just as a name, it didn't really sound right. So like it was really just like a project name. We just said, we'll call it Rail Bedford. And then it kind of stuck. And we thought it was just kind of funny to have this name. But I'm also like feeling the bit of a backlash from people thinking it's a bit of a stupid name. But the plan is, if I'd have bought Bedford Town, the name wouldn't have changed. It would have stayed as Bedford Town.
Yeah.
There's very little would have changed because it does have this long history. It does have it's had a couple of giant killings or experiences in the FA Cup where, they got a draw with Arsenal and I think they beat Newcastle once. And it does have this long history and I wouldn't have done that for the club. I would have proposed to the fans the idea of maybe changing the club colours because of the appeal to an international audience. But with Bedford FC, I mean, the name has changed a couple of times before. It really is even though it has some history, it really is a club where the only fans are mainly people who come to watch their family play. It doesn't really get 500 people like Bedford Town does. We'll get 20 people. So for me, it was almost like a blank canvas to create a club, which I think could get us into the Football League. And there are some things I want to do that I think traditional football people won't like. But in the end, one of the things I've realized, like whatever you think about football, non-league football, they are two things. They are a business and they are a brand. And if I want to bring league football to Bedford, then it has to be a successful business and it has to be a brand that appeals to people. And I know there are words that people will turn their nose up, but there are so many clubs out there struggling financially to come with a new idea or new ideas where you can create sustainable football for your local town, get league football and also drive grassroots football. I think I'll just take those criticisms and just let them bounce off me.
I think you made the right choice with the name Inter Bedford. Sounds like something the guard on the train would say as you're arriving at the station. But what are some of the things then? You say you're going to do some things that traditional football fans won't like. So give me some examples of what they might be.
Well, firstly, thinking of it as a brand. I mean, one of the things that local teams struggle with is that essentially their catchment area of revenue is what, a few miles from wherever the club is, the town. It's who in that town is going to come to the club and buy a ticket and buy a burger and maybe buy a shirt. And football finances, you'll know far better than me, that they're tough and it's driven by player wages. And it's a real struggle for a lot of clubs. But Bedford is the size of a town that deserves to have league football. We've got a population of 174,000 people. It's nearly double Burnley. And we can support a league club. And in terms of other bigger clubs, there's not many near us. We have Luton, we have Cambridge, we have Watford and Milton Keynes. But Bedford itself is its own town and it can support a team. But it still has that struggle of getting people along to the game and spending enough money. So I just put together a plan, and my plan was that I'm in this fortunate position that I have this platform where over a million downloads of my podcast a month and 500,000 followers on Twitter. I have people who get behind this idea of Bitcoin and want to support Bitcoin projects. That would, to me, was the thing that I said, okay, I can actually build a commercial model here where in terms of revenue wise, we can do something which is almost unheard of for a club our size. If I've closed £750,000 in sponsorship right now, that should be, I think they'll get to 1 million by the end of the season, which is above our target. if you had merchandise and match day revenue and shirt sales, I mean, we could probably sell thousands of shirts. We could probably do 1.5 million in revenue, which I think that's probably 8 to 10 times what, say, maybe Bedford Town would do. And then that puts us in a position where, firstly, we can go and get a good manager and sign the best players to give that chance to get up through the divisions. But it also means we can put money into local football. We're already talking about building an academy, starting a women's team, starting a youth setup. So that commercial model allows that, but that commercial is built on the idea that we're building a brand that isn't just a Bedford brand. It is a Bedford brand and an international brand. And I think some traditional football purists just won't like that at all.
Yeah, I'd like to bring Kieran in here. Kieran, as Peter says, this is a new commercial model, but these are pretty impressive numbers he's talking about already, aren't they?
Certainly. I mean, this is in line with the revenues that many clubs in the National League would be delighted to be generating. So yeah, at Tier 10, it's unheard of. And in terms of building an international brand, well, Manchester United are an international brand, Chelsea are, Liverpool are. If we talk to the people at both our clubs, at Palace and Brighton, they'll say, well, we want to increase our international appeal. So I think Peter is taking an alternative approach, but it certainly is a lot of merit.
Peter, you already have international supporters clubs, didn't you?
Yeah, so I've had, I put it out there to the community people who listen to my podcast, and I had 70 people get in touch who wanted to start them up. Now, these are individuals at the moment who I have in a Telegram group I'm coordinating, but we're not going to do too much with this before the end of the season. What we're doing is streaming some games live so they can, you know, so they can follow it. So tonight's game will be streamed on YouTube so they can watch it. And then what I've done is I've put somebody in place to run the supporters clubs. You know, when we have our merchandise by the end of the season, we want to be sending them out flags and stickers and, you know, T-shirts. And then hopefully we'll be getting them to arrange meetups in there, you know, where they are. So I'm going to be out in LA in a couple of weeks. There's a supporters club there. There's a game on while I'm there. So we're going to try and find a pub to get that stream to get a bunch of people down. And there's a real interest in football, in British football right now, especially from Americans. And it's the Ted Lasso effect, which I know some people love and some people hate, but they really like the idea of British football. And, you know, if I can get a bunch of, you know, people in America, whether it's thousands or hundreds of thousands of people, to get behind this club, you know, I struggle to see the downside. I know Americans and their view on football can be annoying. They call it soccer. They don't understand the rules, etc. But if those people are, you know, buying memberships and buying shirts, and that's driving revenue into my club, which is driving grassroots football in Bedford, I don't see a downside. The only downside is for people who are maybe a little bit jealous or don't understand it, or just want to be cynical about things like this.
Yeah, I was hoping, I know what your Twitter name is, so I was hoping we could get through this whole interview without mentioning Ted Lasso, because as you may know, one of the presenters of this pod was turned down for a role in Ted Lasso, playing himself. So it's a bit of a sore spot for me. But in our introduction, Peter, we talked about your ambition, your laudable ambition, and your enthusiasm for Bedford FC is infectious. But regardless of what you say about the size of the town, it's traditionally a rugby town. Your average home attendance is in double figures. Do you genuinely believe you can take them to the Football League, the National League, let alone the Premier League?
Yeah, I do, actually. I do. I mean, look, it's traditionally a rugby town because I think there's a couple of factors. I don't think anybody has ever got behind the football who's been able to build the model that works. Yeah, there's a lot of towns which have rugby and football, or rugby or football, but there's a lot of people here who also do like football. All my friends like football. Whilst we're traditionally a rugby town, it doesn't mean there aren't thousands and thousands of people here who like football. They just haven't had the right thing to get behind. The rugby club has its advantage in that it has a ground in the town centre. So if you want, I mean, I don't even like rugby, but sometimes I go because my friends are like, do you want to come down to the rugby? And we go and have a few beers and you can walk home. Whereas, you know, both Bedfords, our pitches are on the other side of the town. You have to drive down there. If you're driving, can you have a drink? Those kind of things. Yeah. So there's multiple reasons why the rugby, it's been a rugby town, but the rugby side has also struggled. It's never been able to regain a premiership position because it doesn't have a good enough ground. And Bedford's quite a deprived area. It doesn't really have the money that gets behind these things. What I actually think, I mean, the smart thing to do would be for football and rugby to work together. mean, that would be the smart thing. So we've seen that at various places around the, you know, my brother goes to Wasps games. He lives up in Birmingham, and they share a ground with a football club. Yeah. You know, there are things like that I think should happen. But no, I absolutely think it can and it is possible. I think results drive attendance, which is, you know, one of the struggles, because you probably, you know, someone like Bedford Town, they're doing really well this season, get 500 to 600 people. If they go up again, then maybe next year it's 700 to 800. But there's like that lag with the crowd, which means you've got a lag with the revenues, but you've got to forward plan your budgets for your players. Mm. But no, I absolutely do. I mean, there is two parts to this. I want to get Bedford in the Football League. And if I manage to do that, then the next question will be, well, how do we get them into the Premier League?
It seems to me, Peter, you've actually picked a good time to start this project, because more and more fans that we speak to feel alienated by the Premier League, shall we say, and by the Championship and by the money involved. And you talk about Bedford being a deprived town. A lot of people are being priced out of traditional football and are turning to women's football, to non-league football increasingly, to revive their enthusiasm. So this is something that I think the local people will hopefully be excited about.
Well, yeah, and there's a couple of other things we're doing. So, for example, shirts. We'll have shirts going on pre-sale in the next couple of weeks. We're just waiting on a sample and, you know, trying to figure out the price, because you don't want to make it too expensive for people in Bedford, but you want to maximize your commercial. And I know people in America will pay equivalent of about £60 a shirt, but I don't want to charge £60 a shirt for, you know, people who live locally. So yeah, we've just made the decision that, yeah, the shirt will be probably somewhere between £50 and £60, but we'll sell the shirt at the ground for £30. So if people locally who are from Bedford, if they want to support us and get behind us, they can come down to the club and they can get a shirt pretty cheap. Also, on the sponsorship side of things, I'm essentially pricing out local sponsors. Now, if you think I've sold on the shirt alone, I've sold front of shirt and for the shoulders, I've sold that for £450,000. Now, we can get into why there's value in that, but again, that's unheard of. We're selling our shirt for more than clubs in League One, League Two, perhaps even Championship are selling it for. And our, you know, other premium sponsorships are quite expensive as well. Local companies can't afford this, but I've got a chief exec. What we're saying is, what can we do locally to promote local business for free? And what can we do for them? Can we have a section in the program? Can we have a section of the ground which is reserved for local companies, and we give them free promotion? So again, by leveraging this international audience, this Bitcoin audience and these Bitcoin companies to drive this success forward, I'm able to do more things for the town locally that helps local companies and local businesses. And, you know, if this is a success, it isn't just like something that's fun. It isn't just like, great, we've got Bedford in in the league and created grassroots football. We'll be employing people. We'll be an employer of in the town. And if we ever get into, you know, the league and we can bring fans to this town, and a waiting brings 500 people, 1,000 people, that brings economic opportunity to the town as well. So again, yeah, with all the kind of cynicism around it, if I get this right, and I know a lot of people have come out with big promises in football before, and I've read about Billericay, you know, if we do get this right, there is really only upside for Bedford, which is the most important thing.
Just as a matter of interest, Kieran obviously is obsessed with the finances, but with me, it's the kit. So I have to say, Peter, what colour is your kit?
So we are going with the Bitcoin colours. Our home kit will be orange. Our away kit will be white. We wanted our away kit to be black, but it's one of the things I learned during the process. You can't have a black kit until you're in the Championship. So we're going to have a black training kit.
Nice.
So in some ways, we look a little bit like Wolves or Luton at the moment.
Okay, you said in December, just a couple more questions for you, Peter, because I know time's an issue for all of us. But you said in December you were still coming to terms with what's involved in running a football club. So how is that going? Are you surprised by what running a football club entails, and are you learning quickly?
Yeah. So, I mean, the biggest eye-opener is the amount of things you have to think about. There is just so much, you know, match day, training, the team. There's so many little tiny components that go into running a football club. And now I understand why all these volunteers exist around the game, because there is just so much to it. But yeah, you know, we've come to terms with that. We've prepared something which is called the Bedford Bible, and you know, we're creating every element that there is within the club, and how can we, you know, improve it and make it better. So that was one of the things. The other thing that's really struck me is, it's not I'm probably going to say something that I might get hammered for, but it's quite unprofessional how some people do things. Like I consider this a business, and I'm not ashamed to consider it a business because every football club's a business. And my history is running businesses which are profitable. And so I just want to run a very well-oiled professional business. But there's so many aspects around it that I've seen that it's just really unprofessional. A lot of little side conversations, little snidey remarks, or you know, people talking about other people behind their back, which is stuff I just don't have the time or patience for, and I'm just kind of clearing out within what we do. But that's a bit frustrating. And another thing that's frustrating is that football and football clubs are struggling financially, you know, across the leagues, especially outside of the Premier League. I mean, just look what's happened at Derby right now, or Reading, where I was born. You know, look what happened at Blackburn with the Venkies. Like, all across football, there's lots of problems with financing. Yet any attempt by someone to come in with new ideas is met with instant skepticism, or that's not how football should be done. And I think actually what we should do is embrace new ideas within football. We should embrace opportunities. And you know, all our finances are going to be transparent. If you go up on our website, you know, put the first month's accounts up there, everything's going to be fully transparent. And I'm fully happy to, you know, white label this and say, look, we'll share anything we're doing. I mean, hashtag United, another great example. You know, they have people who criticize them, but look at the amazing stuff they've done down there. Look at the number of teams they've done. They've merged now with, was it Basildon, to create the female team? You know, they've created a successful business. They understand media. They understand social media. And what are they doing? They're creating more football opportunity for people. So I think we should embrace these new ideas and push it forward, because you know, if every team that gets this right creates more football opportunity within their town, creates more economic opportunity for the people who live there.
It's interesting to hear you talk about the resistance to new ideas, because there are a lot of people, myself included, who love the traditions of football. You know, love the old kits, love the old badges, love the old nicknames. But sometimes tradition and conservatism are quite close together, aren't they? And football, I find, is quite a conservative with a small C industry sometimes.
Well, there's a really great book called Who Moved My Cheese? People don't like change. And I recommend people go and read that book. But people don't like change. People are resistant to change. And some of it I get and understand. Like, some of the change within football and, you know, up with the top level of football in the Premier League, I get that. It sucks that people cannot afford to go to the game, or maybe they can't afford to buy their kids' shirts. I fully understand that and I appreciate that. At the same time, the Premier League is the most unbelievable product. It's addictive to watch. The football's incredible. My question really is, like, how do we get that to spread a bit more down through the leagues? I mean, the Premier League benefits from a healthy football league, and the Football League benefits from a healthy non-league. But the Premier League, it feels like they're a little bit greedy with their money and a little bit greedy with how they do things. I think, like, how do we embrace the change that supports local football, that supports non-league, but doesn't actually destroy the heritage?
Now, Peter, final question. You're clearly all over this project. You know, this is your baby, your project. But you did promise, you absolutely promised, not to interfere with the day-to-day running of the team. Are you keeping that promise?
I am. My only question with that right now is, I'm like, I can't get them to spend the money quick enough. You know, we have a chance this season to get into the playoffs, and I'm like, spend the money. Here's the budget. Go and spend it. But no, absolutely not. I mean, what do I know? I know nothing about the management of a team. I don't know who you pick at what point. I can be nothing but a backseat manager if I was. But I think that's, like, there's important things that you have to, like, flags in the ground you have to put out there when you start a project like this. And one of them is I won't interfere with the team. I'm actually trying to recruit. I know this is probably a bit unheard of for a team at our level, but I'm recruiting for a sporting director, and I absolutely want that person to be the gap between me and the managers, because I do want our club to have a, yeah, an ethos behind its playing style, and managers come and go, and I want us to keep that. I want us to have a program for player development. Yeah, and I think I found the guy who can come in and be our sporting director. And yeah, if that happens in the summer, we'll have it. But no, and the other thing is, like, I have to travel a lot with work. There are times where I have to be away for a couple of weeks, and I need to know that the people at the club are running it in the right way. So, yeah, I'm not going to be getting involved in that. I'll have a sporting director who will do that for me.
Peter, I think your ambition for your football club and for your town is fantastic. And I'm genuinely quite excited just talking to you. And we will definitely be talking to you again as it develops. But in the meantime, thank you very much for joining us, and we wish you all the best with Bedford FC.
If listeners want to find you on Twitter or the name of your podcast, could you just give us the details?
Yeah, sure. They can follow me on Twitter. It's just my name, at Peter McCormack, PeterMccormack. And if you want to follow the podcast, it's called What Bitcoin Did. It's on Spotify, YouTube, everything. So you should be able to find it.
Well, Kieran, he's a force of nature. I mean, he certainly talks a good fight, doesn't he?
Yes, and his I think Peter's ideas are very progressive in the sense that he knows his particular industry very well, and he can leverage on the back of that to get a broader fan base for his investment in Bedford. And to sell it on an international level, in the sense that Bedford is as a town has a limited, it's already got another football club and it's got rugby clubs and so on. A fascinating stuff. The things which really hit me as well was that the headlines will be he wants to take a club from the 10th tier of English football to the EFL and ideally beyond. But at the same time, he was extolling the virtues of grassroots football, improving community, having a women's team, creating opportunities for kids through having youth development, and all of those things, which tend to go under the radar, are always to be applauded.
Yeah, I also like the fact that he acknowledged that his ambition is such that he realises he's pricing out local sponsors, so he will find new ways of helping out local communities and find new ways of local businesses being able to get their name out there. So it's a fascinating, I think it's the beginning of a really interesting story, and I can't wait to see how it plays out, and I'm fairly certain we'll be talking to Peter again at some stage in the near future. Thank you all for listening. If you'd like to make a small monthly contribution to our pod, and that's very kind of you, then go to patreon.com/priceoffootball. But remember, Price of Football will always be free to air. And if you have a question you'd like answered on the show for our regular Monday questions pod, email us at questions@priceoffootball.com. And in the meantime, I shall hand you over to Mr. Kieran Maguire for his customary farewell.
Well, once again, folks, thank you very much for all the support for the show. Thanks for all the questions. Patreon is one method of supporting the show. But if you want to give us just some good karma, if you go on to the app that you use for the podcast, the Apple app, Spotify, whoever it's, Google Podcast, whoever it's going to be, and you can help us in the charts, which adds to our credibility when we're trying to get guests. If you like to give us 5 stars, that'd be absolutely fantastic. We do try our best, and it doesn't apparently matter what you say. You could say you'd rather the show was broadcast live from a party in Silvio Berlusconi's garden, hosted by Roland Rat as the DJ on the decks. Wouldn't make a blind bit of difference to us. It just helps us in the charts.
Do you know what? I'm convinced there are people listening to this pod just for that bit at the end, just to see who you suggest should host the show instead of us. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
The Price of Football. Price of Football.